The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Who exactly is George Papadopoulos? Well, not since Carter Page has such an obscure foreign policy advisor for the Trump campaign garnered such hype. The media is in full aha mode this morning. Look at the headlines. Why George Papadopoulos is more dangerous than Paul Manafort. From the Washington Post, Russia's outreach to George Papadopoulos just went how spies would have done it. I could read all of the headlines, not even the stories, but I've only got 3 hours. According to the court records unsealed yesterday, Papadopoulos pleaded guilty to making false statements to the FBI. The FBI said he, quote, falsely described his interactions with a certain foreign contact who discussed dirt related to emails, end quote, concerning the Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, we would presume. The interactions with the Russians included a woman claiming to be related to Vladimir Putin. Spoiler alert. She wasn't. All of this allegedly was to gain damaging information on Hillary Clinton. Okay. What's the difference between what he just did and what Hillary did and Fusion GPS, except somebody laundered the information? The term that everybody is looking for is opposition research. Oh, yeah. Note to the Trump campaign. If you want to engage in opposition research, do it like the DNC and Clinton campaign does it. Just have your lawyer contract a former British spy, and that way you have that extra layer of deniability that way. So why is every single media outlet fully on board with the Papadopoulos hype train? What could they possibly be doing? Perhaps it's just irony, or maybe fate. But in addition to Halloween, today is National Magic Day. The mainstream media, in reverence to this most hallowed day, is pulling off a little sleight of hand. So the question is, what's in the other hand that we're being distracted from? If you read the 30-plus pages of the Manafort indictment, you might have noticed a reference to Company A and Company B. Apparently, most of the media missed that. NBC was the only one that, you know, decided to take notice. Sources told NBC that Company A is the Podesta Group, that they were working hand in hand with Manafort lobbying for the Ukrainian government. Tony Podesta, a founder of the Podesta Group and brother to former Clinton campaign chairman and good friend John Podesta, announced that he was resigning from the firm that he founded in order to fight the Mueller investigation. Wait a minute. Wait, what? There's more people involved in the Russia investigation besides Manafort and Papa what's-his-name? And someone with heavy connections to the Clintons? Surely not. Can't be. Well, now I'm in trouble because I broke the national cardinal rule of magicians on National Magic Day. And that is, the mainstream media will never let me in their club now because I've revealed a secret. Don't be fooled by the hand they're showing you. The truth is, there is something else that for some reason nobody really wants you to see.
It's Tuesday, October 31st. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We have a great show for you today. It is Halloween, and we always do some Edgar Allan Poe on Halloween, and we'll be sprinkling that in throughout the show. Also, we have some really amazing story and an amazing guest, Ken Stern, How I Left the Liberal Bubble and Learned to Love the Right. This is the guy who was the head of NPR for a while and realized, wait, I'm shoveling garbage. And he's going to be joining us in about an hour from now. Truly remarkable. Also, this Kevin Spacey story is... You know, can I say, before we get into Kevin Spacey, did you see that they canceled House of Cards yesterday?
Yeah, they're sort of backing off on that initial report.
Oh, well, no, we wanted it to end.
I know.
You know that whole successful thing that built our multi-billion dollar company?
Yeah, we had already decided.
We didn't really think there was anything to it.
they're saying that it was going to end after this season anyway.
Yeah.
They just hadn't announced it, and now they're announcing it. But no official word from Netflix on that, by the way. So, but that is all the reporting, is that the initial report was that it was canceled, and now they're saying, oh, no, look, we've already shot a bunch of it for this next year, and then it's going to be over anyway, so no big deal.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Right. So this is disturbing or telling, I'm not sure which, that somebody can make one accusation and his Emmy is going to be withdrawn. Did you see that? They're not going to present him with the Emmy of all Emmys.
Yeah, like a Lifetime Achievement Award,
yes,
or something he was supposed to get.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not going to give him that. And his show was canceled with one accusation.
An unproven one, right, from 30 years ago that he didn't admit. I mean, he said he didn't remember it. Now, the way I read his statement is very much like, this is how you say you
happened.
Did it. It does seem like it. But again, unless they have an incredible amount of additional information, which is probable... likely?
Well, really likely. And now Rosie O'Donnell is coming out like some savior and saying, we all knew about Kevin Spacey. Well, then why didn't you say something?
I know.
Why didn't you say something? If you knew, why didn't you say something?
Yeah, I think they're misunderstanding
the word no.
Well, no, they're misunderstanding like how heroic their after the fact information is. It's like if you're like, well, look, we knew Jason Voorhees was going to kill a bunch of kids at that camp, but we couldn't really do much about it. It's like, well, no, you're supposed to tell him before he takes out the machete,
everybody.
Right? I mean, like, there's no benefit afterwards. It's like proving that you knew a horrible crime. Look, I knew, that terrorist attack was going to happen.
We all knew it was an open secret. Muhammad Atta was going to the airport. That's not a good piece of information to give later. You give it beforehand.
There shouldn't be an open secret. But then again, when they say they knew, they most likely didn't know.
No.
They heard speculation. Well, I mean, how do you know the difference between speculation and truth? What are you supposed to say?
Right. And that's kind of the frustrating part about this is, A, we shouldn't be encouraging people to come out with unwarranted rumors publicly. That's not a good practice. And B, like, it's just this really frustrating white knight syndrome that, like, these people are like, well, look, we all knew, and... you know, here I am. I'm big enough to stand up and say it after it's already happened. And like, that is not something that we should be giving credit to.
I want to take this to a place.
People dragging their own name into the story, right?
I want to take this to a place away from Hollywood here in just a second. But I want to give something to you. There's an exclusive in the Daily Mail about Kevin Spacey that is pretty disturbing. Kevin Spacey's older brother, Randall, has spoken out about their abusive father. Apparently, Kevin Spacey's dad was an American Nazi who, according to his brother, raped him and brutalized his family so badly that they called him the creature. He started molesting his son at about 13 years old. And I want to just go to this part of it. He said his mother knew about it. As a boy, Spacey tried to placate his father while Fowler, his brother, took the brunt of his father's sadistic abuse. The elder sister, Julie, endured beatings at her father's hands and ran away when she was 18. There was so much darkness in our home, it was beyond belief. It was absolutely miserable. Kevin tried to avoid what was going on by wrapping himself in an emotional bubble. He became very sly and smart. He was so determined to avoid the whippings that he just minded his P's and Q's until there was nothing inside. He had no feelings. I mean, the Kevin Spacey character that he plays on House of Cards is very much like what his brother described him as. He said wherever they were, he and his siblings were trapped. Friends were not allowed into the house for fear that they would see the walls of their dad's office lined with pictures of naked men and women and pornography. Fowler was briefly a scout, but his white supremacist father made him quit when he discovered that the scoutmaster was Jewish.
What a weird life it must be for those people.
Gosh.
Oh, man. Does this not strike you, though, as after-the-fact excuse-making?
No, it doesn't. He said, because in it he says he's really disturbed by what he's hearing about his brother, and he said, it's why I never had children. I was terrified that I would have the pedophile gene, like there is a pedophile gene. He said that I had that gene and I would pass it on and I would be that way to my kids. So he stayed childless his whole life. And he doesn't sound like he is making an excuse for him. He's saying, my brother is deeply troubled.
No, that is an excuse, right?
No, not, I don't, you know, but you can, I mean, I think this leads to evidence that there's probably much more going on. We spoke to somebody we know in New York who kind of plays on the edges of these circles. And he said that the reason why he felt that Kevin Spacey had gone over to England was he wasn't ashamed of being gay. He was ashamed of being a pedophile. I don't know if that's true or not, but he said that in his circles, that's what he had heard over the years.
Is that in the London tourism guides? Yeah, like if you're a pedophile and you need to get away,
I don't know.
I don't remember that being a feature.
I don't know. So there is one observation that I haven't heard anybody make yet. If I asked you, where do all of the dirtbags that prey on people for power, where is the capital of that in the United States?
Now you could say Hollywood.
You could say Hollywood, but where would you say?
You might say another place on the East Coast, maybe
about halfway down.
Yeah, about halfway down.
Yeah,
yeah, maybe one that's not, you know, in a state.
Why has this? What, you know, that Washington is dirty and disgusting. When does this begin to visit in D.C.? Nothing is more essential than protecting your home, but traditional home security can be a punishing and expensive task. There is a better way, and you can do it by protecting your home with SimpliSafe. If you've ever been locked into a long-term security contract, you know you're on the hook for at least 3 years, plus the installation of that system and the system itself costs you just a ton of money. It's hardwired. The system is tearing up your walls, and SimpliSafe is a totally wireless security system. SimpliSafe has no long-term contracts. Your home is protected 24/7, no hidden fees, and it's $15 a month. That's less than three times less than the other guys. All you have to do is go to simplisafebeck.com, get a special 10% discount when you order today. If you want a security system right away, you can have it. Just go to Best Buy and you'll have it protecting your home tonight. It's simplisafebeck.com. You go there now and you'll save 10%. simplisafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Crazy. We're just watching the Today Show with, is that Matt Lauer dressed? Yeah, it's Matt Lauer dressed as Dolly Parton, and I don't know who is dressed as Kenny Rogers. And
a woman dressed as Kenny Rogers.
And he just put his hands on her breasts. And I guess that's funny? I don't know what's funny. I don't know what's not funny anymore. I mean, that wasn't funny, so I recognize that, but I don't know what's acceptable anymore. It's nuts what's happening.
Remember, there was a 3-week scandal when a sports talk show host went on CNN and said the word boobs. He said the word boobs, and that was like a scandal. This is, you know, I mean, you know, the Ellen DeGeneres thing where she's staring at Katy Perry's boobs from 6 inches away.
There is no line. It makes no sense. Do you know, can you imagine how confused our kids are right now? Can you imagine growing up where you don't know what the line is? You're watching video games where absolutely anything goes. You're seeing this world built by your parents and grandparents just tearing itself apart. I mean, in some ways, you know, if you weren't personally involved, if you were an alien, it'd be fun to watch the world burn. You'd just be like, this is crazy. Look at this. I mean, it's just all burning itself down and makes no sense whatsoever. I can't make heads nor tails of the Papadopoulos thing, because correct me if I'm wrong. He is in trouble for going to find dirt on Hillary Clinton and then meeting in London with somebody who had dirt, or said they did, had dirt on Hillary Clinton, but it was from Russia. Trump was in trouble for taking that meeting in the Trump Tower because he met with people that he knew that he says he didn't know were government officials. And he was trying to get dirt on Hillary Clinton.
Trump Jr., yeah.
Trump Jr. Mm-hmm. Okay, so all he was doing was trying to get opposition research on Hillary Clinton, but he got it from Russia. And that's a problem. But what Hillary Clinton did was hire somebody to go get dirt on Donald Trump, who got it from Russia, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, it's weird because there's two parts of that. One is, if you think the Papadopoulos stuff is a big deal, which is fine, you already have a better example of it with Donald Trump Jr.
Yes.
Basically, it was the idea that they had the willingness to get dirt from Russian sources on Hillary Clinton. That's basically that scandal.
But right? Didn't get it.
But didn't get it. They had the willingness to get it. And you could say, okay, that's a problem. Or you could say it's not a problem. But if you either way... you have a better example with Donald Trump Jr. because he's much higher level. Papadopoulos is a nobody. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but on the other side of that, if you believe that both of those things are a big deal, you also have to believe that Hillary Clinton paying Fusion GPS to get dirt on Donald Trump from Kremlin sources, which is in the dossier, that the sources are high level Kremlin Russian sources. And they actually got that information, unlike anybody in the Trump campaign who, if you think they were trying to collude with Russians, are apparently terrible at it, because then they never actually get the information. They get all these meetings and never get anything out of them. Where Hillary actually got this crazy dossier out of the situation, paid for it, and nobody seems to think that's a big deal. I think all of them are big deals, or yeah, none of them are big deals.
They're either both a big deal or they're both not a big deal.
And I guess if you're going to go down a scale of which one is the biggest deal, the least important one is Papadopoulos.
Yes.
Right? Because he's a campaign nobody. Even in the Washington Post story, it says his efforts were greeted with more concern than excitement. Right. By the campaign.
So the campaign is looking at him and he's like, hey, I think I can get some stuff from Russia.
And they're like, oh, geez.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we really want that to happen.
Right.
No, they shied away from him.
Okay, so that is the exact opposite of what happened at the Trump Tower meeting. And certainly 180 degrees different than what happened with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Because Hillary Clinton, she not only got it, they used it. They tried to shop it with the media.
All over the media.
All over the media. They tried to contact and get anybody to use this stuff to cover. The media decided not to because they found that it was not credible. Then what happens? They give it to the FBI, and the FBI uses this as a reason to get a secret wiretap. I got news for you. In the grand scheme of things, the one that hit it out of the park was Hillary Clinton's campaign.
And it should not surprise you that Hillary Clinton was really good at being shady.
Right.
Like, you know, she was the best at it out of this whole group.
I personally have a problem with both of them. You don't get information from the Russians. You don't do that. Why is this a problem for one and not the other? We know the answer. Politics. Don't play them anymore.
Glenn Beck.
It's Halloween. And every Halloween, we spend some time with Edgar Allan Poe for just a few minutes. So people can remember what the spoken word and what real literature is really all about. Edgar Allan Poe is one of the greatest writers of American history and was fascinating in and of himself. But all of his stories seem to revolve around the same kind of thing. A lost love and a man trying to deal with it who eventually spirals into madness. This particular story that he wrote is a favorite of mine, and it is a story of a man sitting at home alone in his library, trying to read, trying to take his mind off of his lost love. It's called The Raven.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, o'er many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "'tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more. Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This is it, and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger. Hesitating then no longer, "Sir," I said, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping. And so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here, I opened wide the door. Darkness there. And nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortals ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning. Soon I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. Surely, surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more. Open here, I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon the bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is upon the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marveled, this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore, for we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door with such a name as nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before, on the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by a reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is only stock in store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. But the raven, still beguiling all my fancy into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door, and then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er. But whose velvet lining, with a lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press on nevermore. Then, methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he has sent thee, respite, respite, and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh, quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore.
quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Prophet," said I, "thing of evil, prophet still if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest toss thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me, truly I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me. Tell me, I implore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Prophet," said I, "thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by the heaven that bends above us, by the God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden if, within the distant Aden, it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Be that our word, our sign in parting, bird or fiend," I shrieked, upstarting, "get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul has spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out of my heart and take thy form from off my door." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." And the raven, ever flitting, still is sitting. Still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted nevermore.
I love Edgar Allan Poe. Just love him.
Go to @GlennBeck or @WorldOfStew. We'll tweet out a link to where you can get that for today. It's a great thing to play when trick-or-treaters are coming to the house, because it's not only scary because it's Poe, but it's also Glenn Beck. So you kind of get the both, sources at the same time.
And you know what's great is if you when we tweet out where you can get it, I think you can get it. I'm not sure if you can get it on iTunes.
I think you can, yeah.
But it's the Raven. It's the Telltale Heart. It's the Conqueror Worm.
Annabelle Lee.
It's just the best of Edgar Allan Poe. So, coming up in a minute, we have Republican Like Me, How I Left the Liberal Bubble and Learned to Love the Right. Ken Stern is joining us. He's the guy that used to run NPR and decided, wait a minute, I might be wrong on all of this. Coming up. My wife Tanya and I needed to change the look of our bedroom pretty badly. We bought a house and we left the curtains that were up, and they were Donald Trump would have liked it. Donald Trump would have liked it. And so we, you know, our bedroom is the last thing of the house to ever be done. I don't know if it's like that in your house, but that's the last room to ever get a facelift. And so one Saturday, we decided to email blinds.com, and I had promised my wife that this would be the year that I'm going to do something about the bedroom and we'll make it look nice. So we wanted to start with blinds.com. And it was a Saturday morning, about 8 o'clock, I think. And we sat down on the couch and we went to the website, and they just have such huge selection. I didn't even know where to start. And so there was a little thing there that says, you know, get a designer to help you. And so I clicked on it and I said, honey, let's just put our information in. And I don't know. I'll have to check my calendar when I'm going to be available. But we'll just make an appointment, yada, yada, yada. Well, as it turns out, we hit send, and within 15 minutes, he said, I'm available now. Do you want to do it? And it was perfect because that's, you know, exactly the time I had. We did a FaceTime session. They took pictures of the house, superimposed the pictures of the drapes that we wanted. Blinds.com completely transformed the room and gave us the best customer service I've ever experienced, bar none. Blinds.com. Blinds, shades, shutters, drapes, whatever it is that you need. You'll find out why they're the number one custom dealer of all of those things, window coverings, because they have mastered it. And now through November 7th, you'll save up to 35% off everything when you go to Blinds.com. Plus, if you use the promo code Beck, you'll save an additional 5%. So you're going to save 40% right now on everything up until November 7th. That's Blinds.com, promo code Beck. Rules and restrictions do apply. It's Blinds.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So, Stu, your dark horse celebrity president is...
Bryan Cranston. At some point, he will run for president and win. That's my prediction.
Listen to this. I kind of want him to run just after this. He was talking to the Hollywood Reporter, and he said, it's just astonishing to me. People need to understand, President Trump is not the person who I wanted to be in office, and I've been open about that. But that being said, he's our president. If he fails, the country is in jeopardy. How egotistical is it for someone to say, I hope he fails? To that person, I would say, F you. Why would you want that? So you can be right? I don't want him to fail. I want him to succeed. I do. I honestly do. And if you've got a good idea that helps the country, oh man, am I going to support you. I don't care if you're a Republican and I'm a Democrat or whatever. I don't care. A good idea is a good idea. Let's do that. We've got to get away from this idea that the country is a political football and someone with a different opinion is the enemy. Assume they love the country as much as you do, and there's always room for improvement. How can we make it better? I love that.
Yeah, I mean, and he's so personable and engaging and funny and can be serious. He's such a good actor. That guy as a candidate is terrifying. I don't know what he believes. I mean, that's a great... part there, but
yeah, what he believes, I don't know, but yeah, that was great.
Great.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
A martyr for social change. That's apparently now how Harvey Weinstein sees himself. Not as an alleged rapist, serial molester, but as some sort of warrior for change all of a sudden. According to the Hollywood Insider, Weinstein is trying to spin his disgrace into a teachable moment. He is allegedly telling his friends, you know, I was born to take a fall like this for this behavior in order to change the world. Wow. Sociopath? Perhaps. Completely ridiculous? Absolutely. But he is right in this. He did change the world every day since his scandals came to light. It seems like another Hollywood figure is outed for their inappropriate behavior. I'm waiting for this to spread to other dirtbag places like, oh, I don't know, Washington, D.C. But it remains in Hollywood right now. This week, Kevin Spacey was accused of making sexual advances on a 14-year-old in the 1980s. And the fallout from this accusation could destroy his career. Netflix quickly announced next season of House of Cards, deeply troubled by last night's news concerning Kevin Spacey, and we're going to cancel it. Now, they're saying that they made that decision long ago, but it didn't stop Netflix from taking the opportunity to create the image that they made this announcement based on his behavior. Nobody wants to be associated with somebody who assaults another person, ever. Spacey's behavior is unacceptable if it's true. Weinstein's behavior, wildly unacceptable. And hopefully Hollywood has learned a hard, painful lesson, and all of us have as well. There are no secrets left in the world. However, we really need to learn something called due process. Due process exists for a reason. And I'm afraid that especially on Halloween, if we're not careful, This is going to turn into a witch hunt.
It's Tuesday, October 31st. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I heard an interview of a guy named Ken Stern, and I look up at the screen. It was on the Blaze Radio with Doc Thompson, I think last week, and I look up on the screen, and it says, you know, former head of NPR, and the name of his book is Republican Like Me. I stopped in my tracks and had to listen to that interview, and it was fascinating, and Ken Stern is joining us now. Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm good, Glenn. Thanks for having me on the show.
Tell the audience who you are, what your upbringing is, what you know, where you've been in life.
Yeah, so lifelong Democrat. I live in a 93% Democratic ward in Washington, D.C., 100% Democratic household. Spent my life around progressive institutions, ran NPR for a while. That's who I am. But I've become increasingly concerned about the polarization in this country. The fact that we've become much angrier at the other side, the fact that we know the side left and left every day.
Yeah.
So I wanted to change that, at least for myself. And that sort of led me to this book, Republican Like Me.
Okay, so you wanted to change things. So you went out and you wanted to learn about the other side. And what did you find?
So it's the old Atticus Finch line from To Kill a Mockingbird. If you want to understand someone, you got to see things from his point of view. So I spent a year traveling around the country, meeting with Republicans, going pig hunting, going hanging out in churches, going to Pikeville, Kentucky, and Youngstown, Ohio, meeting conservative scholars, and listening. And I found an enormous amount. I found that they were not alike how they are portrayed in progressive circles. They're not how, you know, Republicans are quite different than the stick figures you often learn about. And I also found out that people, when you sit down and talk with them, Americans actually are surprisingly moderate people. And it was easy for me, even if I didn't agree with everything that everyone I met, and you never do, I was always easy to find common ground and see things from their point of view. And it was an extraordinary experience, which I recount in this book.
I will tell you, Ken, it is very much the journey that I have made in the last couple of years, the other direction. And it is, it's been disheartening to find this out and then go back to your own side and say, guys, it's not, you got it all wrong. It's not like that. I mean, sure, there are those characters out there. There are those people who just, you know, live and breathe the extreme and it's all politics all the time and they don't care. But that's not what the average person is like. Are you finding, what are you finding when you go back and say, hey, guys, it's really not like that?
Yeah, it's mixed. So my book's been out exactly 1 week. So, you know, this is the beginning of the conversation, not the end. And I find, here's what I found. Very different, sometimes really encouraging, sometimes really disheartening experiences. Face-to-face, when I talk to people over the course of, as I wrote the book and as people now read it and react to it, I find it's great because it's always, when you're talking with people, you can always make progress. The disheartening part is social media. You know, the old, you can't judge a book by the cover. Well, people do. And they judge people by their covers, and they're hateful on social media. And, you know, it's everything from, oh, if you like Republicans now, you must be a white supremacist too, or you must hate gays, or you're some kind of Benedict Arnold, all of which I've heard. And I try to remember, look, those are people who are living their lives through social media. It doesn't represent the majority. That's, you know, the loudest doesn't represent all of us. And, you know, that's what I keep driving against.
So when you were at NPR, and you know, you hadn't had this journey. I think there is and it's disturbing to me. There's some really good people that I know in journalism, but they just are blind and they don't, I'm not sure if they don't want to see it because it will complicate their life or they just are incapable of seeing why people feel the way they do about the media.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, you know, my book's not about media, but of course, you know, media affects all this conversation. Because of my background, I talk to people about media a lot. And I heard from people, you know, who I wouldn't ordinarily talk to, didn't talk to when I was NPR, don't talk to in my ordinary life. And a lot of them had felt really alienated from mainstream media, which is not surprising when media's, you know, trust factor is in the 30s. Only about 30% of people trust media. And you hear it. They feel alienated. They feel unrepresented. They feel patronized. And I wanted to share that back with, you know, the people in media. And as I thought about it, it's not because they're not lots of, as you say, Glenn, they're tons of talented, hardworking journalists at all these institutions, mm-hmm. committed to the craft of journalism, but they live in their own bubble. We all do. That's sort of my story as well. And when you talk with people like you who share your political feelings, who share your idea of what's important and who's important, who should be heard and what should be heard, it affects, you know, you get into this groupthink. And I think that's it's possibly both. It's possible to be talented, hardworking journalists and subject to this type of groupthink environment that I think leads to this break in trust with a lot of the American public.
So you never had picked up a gun before, and I would I would assume that your view of gun owners was quite different than what it turned out to be after you went on a pig hunt. Can you talk about that a bit?
So the way I structured this book, Glenn, is I want to take a few issues. So I started with this. I can't be right about everything. I'm stuck on myself as anyone, you know, as the next guy, but I couldn't possibly write. But I want to take a few issues where I was pretty sure I was right on and challenge myself. Guns, climate, poverty programs. And guns sort of jumped out. And I had never fired a gun before, but I had sort of settled views on gun control. And I went pig hunting and went to gun shows. I called up John Lott, the conservative economist who wrote More Guns, Less Crime, and said, John, you know, persuade me I'm wrong. And I learned a couple things. I changed my views on gun control, about how to reduce homicides in this country. And I learned I'm a terrible shot. hunting in Texas. Met the nicest group of people. In the morning, I shot with a three-generation family from Georgia, including 8-year-old Isaac. In the afternoon, this diverse group of guys from Houston. And they were nice enough to give me credit for killing a pig, but I'm sure it wasn't me in the end, but yes. It was a great experience.
So what was it, I assume, talking to John Lott is a fascinating experience. What was it that you changed on with guns, or why?
So I think that's sort of the aha moment for me. I still, you know, like a lot of Republicans, I think there's probably room for additional gun control mechanisms. But I've lost the view that that's what's going to drive down crime. I mean, we've actually had, over the last 20 years, this extraordinary drop in gun homicides mm-hmm. by over 50%. And it has nothing to do with gun control. The number of guns have gone up. So we actually know how to reduce gun crimes. And it has much to do with economic power. It has to do with programs like the pulling lever programs in Boston. It has to do with better policing. It doesn't have anything to do with gun, you know, sort of what people are fighting about. And that's where I changed my view, which is let's not focus on, you know, gun ownership by law-abiding gun owners. Let's focus on the programs that we know reduce crime, which is good for everyone.
So how do you go back to your world and tell them this, that you've had an experience that they haven't had? How are your, not the people on social media, how are your friends and family dealing with this?
So it's a mixed bag. My mother, who is a McGovern, a Democrat, read the book and loved it. My 10-year-old son boos my television appearances. So it's a mixed bag, and I expect that's what it will be going forward. I mean, I think some people are open to this message, but it sort of clashes with what they hear every day. So it's, you know, to me, you know, it's talking, it's sharing the story, it's getting people to realize we're actually not nearly as different as we've been led to believe.
Can you hang on for a second, Ken? I'd like to ask you, you know, what's the path forward when we can't? I'm having a hard time today. I'm struggling with the stark contrast in coverage, which I think both are wrong, on what's happened this week with Manafort and last week with Fusion GPS. And if we can't take the beam out of our own eye, there's no there's no going forward. And hang on just a second. I'd like to continue our conversation about that and what's happening in the media today.
We always talk about wanting people from the other side to actually take our views seriously. And here's somebody who actually did it, right? I mean, that's pretty rare
brave
these
guy.
Days. Yeah,
really
Ken
brave.
Stern. He's the former NPR CEO and the author of the book Republican Like Me. He's on Twitter at Ken P. Stern.
So if you want your home sold on time and for the most amount of money, I mean, who doesn't? You can do it, and you can do it without somebody that has a whole bunch of excuses on why it's not happening. You know, you can go through hell trying to sell your home. And we've seen everything. We started realestateagentsitrust.com for people like you. We have over 1,000 agents all over America, where their bond is their word. They're fans of the show. They share your sensibilities. Our agents are fully vetted. They're handpicked by my team for their knowledge, their skill, their track record. And boy, we have heard it all. People who have tried to sell their house for almost a year and can't do it. All kinds of excuses. They go over to realestateagentsitrust.com. We get it sold in 2 weeks. Thousands of families have put the realestateagentsitrust.com to the test, and the results are remarkable. Find out for yourself. Realestateagentsitrust.com. You want to sell your house on time for the most amount of money. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Ken Stern is a guy who he was the CEO of NPR. He lives in Washington, D.C. He's are you still a Democrat?
So it's interesting. So I lifelong Democrat. For this year, I went out and re-registered as a Republican.
You did.
And when I did. I was going to commit. And when I came back, you know, it was a question that sort of hung over me. Would I stay Republican? Would I be Democrat when I came back? When I came back, I re-registered as an independent,
And
I sort of think of myself as a skeptic towards both sides at this point.
I think that is, I think that is the healthiest choice anyone could make. I mean, we play this game to where we deny the sins of our own side because we want to win, and there is no winning if you were playing that game. And I'm seeing this with this Russia stuff where, you know, what came out yesterday, really bad stuff. I mean, we've been on the Manafort is a really bad guy for years, and it's really bad. And he got information, or they were trying to, get information with Papadopoulos through Russia. The media is making a big deal out of it. I think they should. I don't think we should be getting our information for political purposes from Russia. However, that's what the Clintons did. They just laundered it through Fusion GPS. Is there a difference between these two?
So, Glenn, let me sort of pick up on one thing, which is where you start off with saying it's about winning. And I think that's exactly right. It less becomes about right or wrong. It becomes about
right.
My side versus your side. And I followed this story, and it's interesting because I've watched it on Fox and I watched it on, MSNBC.
Totally different stories.
It's totally different. It's like they live in a different world. And
yeah.
It's not because, it's because they want to prove out their side.
Yeah.
And that's a very dangerous thing, I think.
How do we survive this, Ken? I've come to the conclusion that the only thing we can do is change ourselves in our own life. Do you have better advice than that?
I don't, and it's what troubles me coming back, because I mean, I look at what's happening. You know, I look at President Trump and his sort of fights with the media, and I don't think President Trump caused this. He's sort of the perfection of this. He's riding this sort of anger and fostering it more. So I think we are in a very dangerous place. And I think, you know, so for me, I don't have any neatly packaged answers, unfortunately. You know, I think the media plays a role, and I'm hopeful that, you know, being of the media and also being a media critic can raise awareness of some of these issues and help people think of it. And I think that, and the other place I think it needs to start is, and I become quite jaundiced towards, is political parties, who I think are far more off-center than the public they purport to represent.
Yeah.
And, you know, they also foster division and anger, and, you know, that's got to be called out too.
Yeah, I just don't think that there's much difference in the tactics on either side. They both know by dividing they can raise more money, and it's what's killing us. And you know, with social media, and I know you talk a lot about social media in your book, that it's you know, that we're becoming addicted to this hate and this division, and we better wake up and turn around.
Yep, I totally agree. And these are long-term trends, not easily reversed. And as you say, I think it's about changing ourselves and changing our views of, it's not about my team versus your team. It's really got to be the American team and finding compromise and common ground. And you know, that's what I'm dedicating this book to and the conversations about.
So where do you go from here, Ken? What's next?
Oh God, I wish I knew. I wish I knew, Glenn. The book just came out, fostering all sorts of interesting conversations in the media and elsewhere. I'm going to punch through this and keep going on this path, I think.
Well, anything that we can do, Ken, to help you, we are in. It takes a unique person to question themselves and the everything that they believe, and then really follow through. I mean, when you call John Lott, you're not calling a straw man. You're calling the best that there is, and to be able to really look at that, whether you would have changed your mind or not, doesn't matter. That's a rare quality, and I applaud you for it. And anything we can do to help you get the message out, we will do. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thank you, Glenn. Enjoyed it.
You bet. Republican Like Me is the name of the book, How I Left the Liberal Bubble and Learned to Love the Right. Truly remarkable. You know, he didn't really get into it, but, you know, when he went pig hunting, he learned all kinds of stuff about, wait a minute, I thought people were crazy to carry guns. I thought that, you know, they were teaching their kids all kinds of bad things. And these are great families. It's rare that somebody, the CEO of NPR.
Yeah, and to do it honestly, too, as you point out. I mean, John Lott, if you don't know who he is, I mean,
he's the best
economist
of the best,
who really looks into guns and has proven a lot of that. It's an impressive thing to do.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Timothy and his sister Elizabeth anxiously waited for their dad to get home from work. It was Halloween. It was October 31st. They were so excited to go trick-or-treating. As soon as they heard the doorknob turn, they rushed him at the door as he walked through, still clad in his white optician's coat. Ronald rounded up his young children, and he went out trick-or-treating, remembering the times when he was trick-or-treating. Now, wondering, how did I get so old as I'm walking my kids down the street? He accompanied his children to their friend's first stop of the night, 4112 Done Rail Drive. He rang the doorbell. Nothing. The owners were taking much too long to answer the door. Children impatiently ran to the next house, leaving their dad in the dust. When Ronald finally caught up with the kids, he was sporting 5 giant pixie sticks. The children all greedily grabbed the neon sticks of sugar, but Ronald promised he would distribute the candy among the children when they got back to the house. After all, he was the one that waited. It was really late when they got home. He got the kids ready for bed, but before he fell asleep, Timothy requested a treat from his delicious haul.
He chose the crown jewel, a 22-inch giant pixie stick. The sugar had stiffened some in the tube, so Ronald helpfully rolled the candy between his hands to loosen the contents for Timothy. The child hurriedly poured the confection into his mouth. Timothy recoiled. It didn't taste, Dad, like it's supposed to. In fact, it tasted awful. Dad jumped up. Ronald dutifully ran to get some Kool-Aid for his son to wash out the bad taste. But the Kool-Aid didn't make it very far. Timothy immediately started vomiting and convulsing. When the ambulance finally arrived, they found Ronald holding Timothy as he foamed from the mouth. Less than an hour later, Timothy was pronounced dead at the hospital. An autopsy revealed the 8-year-old had died from a fatal dose of cyanide. The 2 top inches of the giant pixie stick Timothy prized so much contained a dosage of cyanide that was enough to kill 2 adults. Thankfully, the other poisoned pixie sticks remained untouched. Ronald sobbed as he hypothesized at what an unidentified monster was handing out to children. He told the police officers he vaguely remembered getting the candy from 4112 Don Rail Drive. He didn't get a look at the owner. He only saw a shadowy arm. When police arrived at 4112, they questioned the Melvins. But they were confounded when they learned Mr. Melvin didn't return home from work until 10:30 that night of Halloween, and Mrs. Melvin stopped answering the door when she ran out of candy at 6:45. That's before Ronald said he was there. Not to mention that none of the candy that Mrs. Melvin gave out that night were pixie sticks. Police interrogated the entire neighborhood and still couldn't find the source of the deadly candy. The dad, who had watched his children rush to his legs to say, "Please, Dad, let's go, it's Halloween," was beside himself. Already having a terrible year and his son's death appeared to push him over the edge with grief. He was $100,000 in debt, 8 months behind in car payments, was being threatened with repossession. He held 21 jobs in the last 10 years, and he was struggling hard to keep his latest optician gig. He further strained the family financing by taking out a $10,000 life insurance policy on his children earlier in the year, to which his wife protested as an unnecessary expense. She probably would have objected to the additional 2 $20,000 life insurance policies that Ronald took out on Timothy and Elizabeth on October 3rd, if she had known about them. Mrs. O'Brien would have also been horrified to find out that mere hours after Timothy's murder, her husband called to collect on the policies. Ronald was a man who had never had a parking ticket in his life. By all accounts, he was a dedicated father and a devout member of the Second Baptist Church. But it only took a jury 46 minutes to find Ronald guilty of capital murder and 4 counts of attempted murder. Ronald didn't just kill his own son. He is the man responsible for killing Halloween for generations of children yet to be born. He's the reason we had to go to the hospital to have them x-ray everything. He's the reason we could no longer have popcorn balls or candied apples. Ronald Clark O'Brien, also known as the Candy Man by his fellow death row inmates, successfully perpetuated the decades-old myth that some despicable people violate Snickers and Milky Way bars with the intent on mercilessly killing innocent children. The truth is, and you should know it this Halloween, police have never documented an actual case of anyone randomly distributing poison goodies to children on Halloween. There is no madman giving out apples with razors, no arsenic-laced Twix. But in 1974, there was one monster who deliberately put cyanide in a pixie stick. His victim wasn't at random. His victim was his own child. So, this Halloween, let your kids eat their candy. Don't scare them with a legend that just isn't true. But I also wouldn't tell them about Timothy either.
I had to share that story with you today. I find it fascinating that our childhood was changed because of a guy we've never even heard of. Had you ever heard that story before? He's the only one. Until today. On Monday, a trick-or-treat. Now, this is what I just said to you. No evidence. Police have never documented a single case except for that. This morning. Last night, a trick-or-treat bag belonging to a child had a Ziploc baggie with a frightening substance, crystal meth. They received a complaint, police, of a suspicious package located in child's Halloween candy. The powder found inside tested positive for methamphetamine. The child had not taken the drugs. Police believe the meth was placed in the child's bag during a Halloween event in the downtown area. Yada, yada, yada. It was in a Ziploc bag. Ziploc baggies can open. Yada, yada, yada. Now, I'm going to stand by that this never happened in America, because this actually was reported on the Menominee Tribal Reservation. So this...
Okay.
It's technically still not accurate. America.
I will say, though, that it's a little bit of a different story. It's not, if it's just a plastic bag of meth, that's not like hiding somebody, it in candy. Yeah. It's also...
Somebody dropped it into a bag or something.
And I will say, just like, remember the clown scare from a few months ago? You remember that?
And then whatever happened to that?
Nothing, because it was nothing, right? I mean, and I think like what happens with these stories, 99% of the time you find out that it's either a hoax or something with someone in the family or something like that. It's almost never, I mean, as you stated, never with candy.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
Did you have yours checked?
Yeah, when I was, I don't know if I ever actually, I know my friends, some of my friends had gone to the hospital for the x-ray thing. I don't know if I ever did that, but my parents went through every piece of candy.
Oh, we did too. And I remember, I'm old enough, and I think you have to be about my age to remember this, or to live in a small enough town to where maybe, perhaps, there are some towns still where this is okay, where you could get popcorn balls.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I don't remember getting a popcorn ball, but I remember homemade things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very rarely, and honestly, every one of them my parents would throw out.
Yeah, see, when I was growing up, Those were the real gets. I mean, there was a lady, Mrs. Olson, that lived down the street, and she would make these giant popcorn balls, and I remember them. And they were that was the get on the street. And people would make candied apples, caramel apples. And I remember being able to eat them and excited that you could eat them, and then later having to throw them all out, and my parents went, nope, 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 nope. And it was because of this guy.
I believe there's a poet who once outlined the idea that the good old days weren't always good, but tomorrow ain't as bad as it seems. And he, I think, executed a very interesting part here because, you know, keep your popcorn balls, I want a Snickers. I get that there's a bit of nostalgia there and there's reverence for it.
Yes.
But I don't want your, I don't want you to cake together some popcorn. Give me a Twix.
Okay. Well, yes.
Okay.
This is also at a time when there wasn't fun size. I remember when they first came out with fun size and I'm like, that ain't fun. This is not fun.
Oh, no. You can have less of the thing you like.
Right.
What joy you'll
How
find.
How is that fun?
I was so, when I'm growing up, my big goal when I became an adult and I became, you know, I had like $4 in my bank account was to buy full-size candy bars for the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I always was like, I always dreamt about doing that because I grew up, I mean, it was mostly fun-size stuff. And finally, I got to that point where I now have $4 in the bank account. And I came down to Texas and I bought the full-size bars. Like three people showed up. No one trick-or-treats anymore. There's like four people that come around the neighborhood.
I know.
It's not even worth it.
I know. And these poor people that you do, because we go to a different neighborhood because nobody trick-or-treats.
Yeah.
And so we go to somebody else's neighborhood. And I wanted to say to Tanya, hey, listen, on Monday, we should go buy all of those houses and just drop off bags of candy. Because I feel sorry for these guys getting hammered every year.
You're going to donate candy to the
yes,
trick-or-treaters?
I feel like we should.
I like that.
The number of Americans preparing for emergencies has soared recently, and that's a good thing. We should all take a moment and reflect on the fact that stuff happens. And the best time to prepare, you know, is when things are calm. Preparedness and being more self-reliant is a journey. And if you haven't taken that first, most important first step, make it today. My Patriot Supply has helped Americans prepare for emergencies for 10 years now, and I have depended on them for many years for my food storage. They are really, really good. The food is of the highest quality. I don't know how they make it for less than a dollar per serving because it's really good stuff. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, less than a dollar per serving right now for 102 servings of survival food. So you get the three squares a day, 102 of them. For $99. You cannot beat that. You don't know when an emergency will happen to your family. Be prepared now. Do it now. Start your journey with My Patriot Supply. Go to preparewithglenn.com. That's preparewithglenn.com or call 800-200-7163. That's 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So at what point do we get to the real horror story that's going on?
The real horror story?
I've noticed on Halloween, you're talking a lot about, you know, you're doing Edgar Allan Poe and you're telling
Whatever.
Stories from the past. How about the horror stories that are going on right now?
Right.
Why do you keep ignoring them?
Which is what?
Ed Gillespie? The guy's running for governor. He's basically, I mean, I would say,
yeah.
I don't know if you could call him a mass murderer.
I don't know if he's running for governor as much as he's trying to run over Latino children.
Thank you.
Yes. Oh. If you haven't seen the ad, I'm going to narrate a little bit, but let's go ahead and play this ad. It's an anti-Ed Gillespie. Oh, there's Hispanic children running, black children, and a Muslim child. The Hispanic child is now running from a big truck with a Confederate flag on the back.
Happening all across America right now.
Here he comes. Here he comes in the big black truck. Telling the other kid playing basketball, run. It's got a Gillespie for governor.
Got a sticker right on it.
Run. Here comes the Muslim is now running. The black children are running. The Muslim children. The Hispanic children all running. Trying to get away from this big, don't tread on me. Flag on the front, Confederate flag billowing in the back. Oh my goodness. And it was just a nightmare of all these children.
Is this what Donald Trump and Ed Gillespie mean by the American dream? Latino Victory Fund paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
That's one of the most... I cannot believe
crazy.
That ad was made. And they, by the way, at the end, they show footage of Charlottesville with the tiki torch sort of march. And apparently all four of these children from four different cultures all had the same dream on at the same time, which is
same
really
dream.
Scary.
Same dream.
Donald Trump and Ed Gillespie mean by the American dream? Yes, that's what they mean. They mean people in pickup trucks with Confederate flags are going to run down innocent Muslim and black children. That is what they mean, yes.
That's amazing. And you know
Unreal.
What? It will be effective.
It probably will.
It will be effective.
Probably will. That is
we deserve the government we get. We really do. We deserve the government.
If you fall for nonsense like that.
Yeah, we deserve it.
We all deserve it.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that is absolutely, it's completely offensive. The idea, I mean, and it's like Ed Gillespie's this hardcore guy. He is not, There's so many things wrong with the ad, but it's the same thing. Like Paul Ryan was the guy pushing, you know,
people in a wheelchair
off of cliffs. Yeah. And I mean, it's the same tactic over and over again.
Of course we hate each other.
Yeah.
Of course we hate each other. If that's what you think, that a person who believes in small government really wants to run down black and Arab and Hispanic kids and run them down with his pickup truck, if that's who you think you're running against, if you think that's who they are, of course you hate. Of course you hate. Gotta stop it. Gotta stop it. It is poison to the Republic.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
It was a crime of contempt. One young man's logic misguided through the onslaught of insanity. His name remains unspoken, but his crime is unforgettable. This is his story.
True. Nervous. Very, very dreadfully nervous. I had been and am. But why would you say that I'm mad? The disease sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them.
Above all, the sense of hearing was acute. I heard all things in heaven and in hell. Oh, I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It's impossible to say how the first idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object, there was none. Passion, there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold, I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes. It was this. He had an eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so, by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man, and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now, this is the point. You fancy me mad. Madmen know nothing. But you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the whole week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it, oh, so gently. And then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a lantern, dark, all closed, so no light shone out. And then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it in slowly, very, very slowly, so I may not disturb the old man's sleep. Oh, it took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening, so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ha! Would a madman have done something as wise as this? And then, when my head was well within the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh, so cautiously, cautiously, for the hinges creaked. I did it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight. But I found the eye always closed, so it was impossible to do the work. It was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone and inquiring how he had passed the night. So, you see, he would have been a very profound old man indeed to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in on him while he slept. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moves more quickly than did mine.
Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could scarcely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that I was there, opening the door little by little, and he not even dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea, and perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly as if startled. Now, you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was black as pitch with thick darkness, for the shutters were closed and fastened through the fear of robbers. And so I knew he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on, steadily, steadily. I had my head in. I was about to open the lantern when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in the bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quiet, still. I said nothing. For a whole hour, I did not move a muscle. And in the meantime, I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in bed, listening, just as I had done night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently, I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief, oh no, it was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I knew the sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it had welled up from my own bosom, deepening with a dreadful echo. The terrors that distracted me, oh, I say I knew it well. I knew what the old man felt and pitied him. Although I chuckled at heart, I knew that he had been laying awake ever since the first slight noise when he turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It's nothing but the wind in the chimney. It's only a mouse crossing the floor." Or, "It's merely a cricket who's made a single chirp." Oh, yes. He had been trying to comfort himself with these suppositions. But he found them all in vain. All in vain. Because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he never saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a very long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. Oh, you cannot imagine how stealthily, stealthily, until at length a single dim ray, like the thread of a spider, shot from the crevice and fell upon the vulture eye. It was open. It was wide, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with perfect distinctness, a dull blue with a hideous veil over that chilled my very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray as if by instinct precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but an over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say, there came to my ears a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound. I knew that sound well, too. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates a soldier into courage. But even yet, I refrained. I kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could maintain the ray upon the eye. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder. I say louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I told you that I was nervous, and so I am.
And now, at the dead hour of night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet, for some minutes longer, I refrained and stood still. But the beating grew louder and louder. I thought his heart must burst. And then a new anxiety seized me. The sound. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once. Only once. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. Then I smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, his heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, didn't vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length, it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone dead. I placed my hands upon the heart. I felt it for many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. His eye would trouble me no more. If you still think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. Then I took up three planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. Then I replaced the boards so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out, no stain of any kind, no blood spot whatever. I had been too wary for that. A tub had caught it all. When I had made an end of these labors, it was 4 o'clock. Still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart, for what now do I have to fear? There entered 3 men who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises. I bade the gentleman welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search. Search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed them his treasures, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from your fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner convinced them. I was simply at ease. They sat while I answered cheerily. They chatted of familiar things. But ere long, I felt myself getting paled and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears. But they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definitiveness until, at length, I found that the noise was not within my ears. Now, no doubt I grew very pale, but I talked more frequently and with a heightened voice, yet the sound increased. What could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound. Much such a sound as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I, I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles, a high key, with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair in which I had been sitting and grated it across the boards, but the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder and louder and louder, and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God, no. No, they heard. They suspected. They knew. They were making a mockery of my horror. This, I thought, and this, I think. But anything was better than this agony. Anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now again, hark, hark, louder and louder and louder. Villains, I shrieked. Dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here. Here is the beating of his hideous heart.
Oh, this is the way that literature in the 1800s was meant to be read. You read anything prior to 1920, really, and it was meant to be read out loud. Before the times of radio and television, you were lucky if you had somebody in the house that could not only read, but could read it the way the author intended it to be read out loud. And you were the family's movie theater. You were the family's television and radio.
At Glenn Beck and at World of Stew. We're going to tweet the link where you can get that at iTunes. I think it's going to be up at glennbeck.com as well today. There's four pieces of Edgar Allan Poe that are great for when kids are coming up to trick or treat. It's a perfect time to play them. And there's another story we debuted today, which was a real story from the 70s of a murder, which is...
It changed Halloween.
It really changed Halloween.
It changed Halloween. If you didn't... if you ever had to take your candy to the hospital to be x-rayed, or you ever heard, no, throw that away because there's some madman that's poisoning kids, it only happened once in the United States. Once. And this one time changed everyone's Halloween, but there's some really important information that I never had known. And that's available also today at glennbeck.com. With the recent credit bureau breach, one of the common questions that people are asking, should I freeze my credit? No, because that's not going to protect you. Identity fraud, when there is a threat arising from a data breach like this, hackers get access to social security numbers and birth dates and an unspecified amount of driver's license numbers. They can use just this information, or they can go on the dark web and couple it with more information, and they have everything they need to steal in your name. They can steal from your 401k. They can take out loans in your name. And then what? Now is the time that you need protection, and I'd like you to sign up for LifeLock today. LifeLock uses proprietary technology to help detect a wide range of identity theft. And if there is a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see more of the threats to your identity. So go to LifeLock.com. Call them now, 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. That's Beck for 10% off your LifeLock membership. LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck and save 10%. 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So Danish police have now charged inventor Peter Madsen with murder. He is what, 30 years old, and he went on a journey on his handmade submarine there in Copenhagen Harbor, and a journalist, an American journalist, Kim Wall, went on, and she was last seen in a picture on top of his submarine with him. And when he came back in, he said, "Oh yeah, well, I dropped her off on shore earlier than I went back out." Then he said, "No, there's something else that happened. She was, she got sick on board and fell overboard. Then they found a torso without heads and, or a leg." And he said, "Oh, yes, she died on board. And then I just buried her at sea." And they were like, "What?" "Yeah, I cut her up, but I buried her at sea." He's been charged with murder. They don't know what happened. They don't know why it happened. But they have found an inventor that is the worst possible liar on Earth.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, so Pat just joined us. And I just gave you, you probably missed it, Pat. I just gave the story of a guy who I think is the probably the dumbest killer in the world. He brought a journalist on board to his handmade submarine, and they went for a cruise in the Copenhagen Harbor. And when she didn't return, he was like, "Oh, well, I dropped her off early. I dropped her off earlier." And they were like, "Oh, where?" "You know, on that place right there by the rocks over there somewhere, I dropped her off. She wanted to get off." "Oh, okay. Well, she doesn't show up." And then he changes his story when they ask. He said, she had an accident, and that's why I had to drop her off. Then they found a torso in the water, and he said, she had an accident, and I didn't drop her off. I actually buried her at sea."
That's a minor change in story. Yeah, it's a redirect.
And then they said, "Well, she's missing her arms and her legs and her head." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh, well, she had an accident. I buried her at sea, but before I did, I dismembered her."
Well, yeah, we're gonna put her out there in one piece. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right. So that explains the blood in the submarine that matches her. And he said, "Yeah, but didn't want her to bring, you know, it's a rule at sea. If you die at sea, you bury,
you dismember the body first.
And you bury them at sea." But, mm-hmm. You know, he had to be reminded you were in Copenhagen Harbor. It's not like you were out in the middle of nowhere. Okay. So pretty bad guy, right? I mean, pretty
seems
dumb.
Pretty,
yeah. Pretty dumb and pretty bad. Not as bad as this one. On Friday, Miami police, around 7:30, were notified of a foul smell coming out of a room at 6268 Northwest 23rd Avenue. A mother called and said there was a foul stench coming from her son's room. Now, if we had a dollar for every mother who had a foul stench coming from her son's room, we'd all be millionaires, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except this one was really bad. She had asked her son what had happened, and because she said, "Whoa, it is really starting to stink in there." And he said, "Well, I have diarrhea, and also I have vomited a few times, and the dog went in and defecated on the floor. So don't go in, Mom."
That's a lot of things
going
on in that
room.
Yeah.
A lot of things going on.
That would account for a somewhat unpleasant odor.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. He had a stomach ache, and he said, it was, and he had seen a rat in his room. So don't go in, Mom, because there's a rat. There's vomit, diarrhea, and the dog.
Doggy do, and there was a rat.
So she couldn't take it anymore, so she called police, and the police arrived. And as the police were advancing towards his room, he came out, quote, sweaty and naked, and said, oh, hi, wow, I have a really bad stomach ache. You shouldn't come around me. I'm going back into the room. And they're like, no, why don't you stay out here and we'll go into the room. So they went in, and as they were walking in, he said, if you find anything in my room, it's from the internet. And they stopped and went, what? Well, if you find anything, it's just it's not what it seems. But go ahead. So they went into his room, and it was not something that I care to describe.
A lot of internet stuff.
Wait, you can't go through this whole story and not give us a hint.
Well, I'll give you this. They found on the bed there was what appeared to be a girl. Okay, and she was decomposed, and as he said, no. No, it's not. It's not real. He was still outside. It's not real. I got that on the internet. That is a that's a blow up doll with and it comes with human flesh.
They have that's those a quote. Now?
That's a quote. Yes, wow. It comes now. Wow. It's a blow up doll with human. Look, it doesn't have any organs. And they noticed that it didn't have any organs. Of course, he did put the organs, I believe, in the trash can in the room. And it turns out that it's not from the internet. It was his girlfriend.
I'm really surprised that wasn't from the internet.
Yeah.
I was buying the story about the blow-up doll with the human skin.
I was just about to say, capitalism is amazing.
Yeah.
They'll even come out with blow-up dolls with human skin, but no.
No, I'm quoting, a life-size blow-up doll. There's a life-size blow-up doll in the closet. And it's the doll is made of human flesh.
Jeez, that is awful.
So
did they leave him alone? Did they just leave?
Yeah, they asked where do you get dolls like that? Because they're stinking up the joint. But at least they covered the smell of the vomit and the dog poop.
Oof, man!
Isn't that a horrible story?
Yeah.
Only share that on Halloween. Welcome to the program. Pat Gray is here from Pat Gray Unleashed, which follows this program on the Blaze Radio Network. Hello, Pat.
Hello. Coming up on my story, I've got a little Halloween story as well about the dating game serial killer. You know about this guy?
No.
Guy who was on the dating game in 1978. You know, the Jim Lang show.
Yeah. That'd be in the butt, Bob.
He was, that was the newlywed game.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Yes.
This
okay.
is the dating game where you have a bachelorette and then three eligible bachelors. Got Let's it. Meet them yeah. right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bachelor number one was a guy in the middle of a serial killing spree. And she selected him. So I'll tell you.
Okay, wait.
You gotta listen to the show to find out more.
Wait, but I don't want to. Okay, so
that's not how this works.
That's not how any of this works. But I pay him. I pay his salary. So he was in the middle of a killing spree while he was on the show?
Yes. Yeah, he'd already killed three or four or five women by then.
Oh,
by the time
gosh.
He was on the dating game. Yeah. It's an amazing
and is
story
this
that
new,
I never
is this
heard.
New?
No, it's, I mean...
I've never heard that.
Yeah.
How did they...
I don't know
Those dating game people, man, they cover stuff up. They were so good at the cover-up.
Right?
Seriously. Yeah. How was a show like that?
I don't know. Because that lasted until what? It must have shut down, though, shortly after that, because the dating game didn't go into the 80s, did it?
I feel like it did, no?
You think so?
Yeah, and then it came back for a while.
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah.
Vaguely. But we'll be talking about that in a few minutes. But what I wanted to talk to you guys about was the Kardashians' visit to Planned Parenthood.
Hang on just a second. Wait a minute. Hold on just a second. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I'm going to do the same to you.
Okay.
Do you know why our Halloweens were always wrecked and we always had to, you know, you got to x-ray this stuff and throw away all of that candy because there's some crazy person out there. Do you know why?
Was it because of the Candyman from Houston?
Shut up.
1974?
Shut up.
Killed his son?
Shut up. How did you know that? I've worked with you for 30 years. We've never told that story.
For a long time.
We've never told that story on the air.
Huh.
You've never told me that story.
I've told that story.
No, I had to wait until you left to be able to find out the truth that you've been covering up.
Well, we did tell it on the air today.
Yeah, actually. We did. It's fantastic. You can find it at glenbeck.com. It's a great story. You can find it at glenbeck.com.
It is, because look at all the trouble we went to. Look
one
at
guy.
All the hassle. Look at there all the is, fear. And there, it never happened to anybody else.
Never. Not once.
Right. There's this no the, confirmed story of that ever happening.
No.
Other than the guy to get his son's
and he,
insurance money.
Right. And he didn't tell the, he didn't kill a neighbor. He killed his own son.
His own son.
So it's not like he was, it was by random. That
right.
never, ever happened in America.
Right.
Now we've told the end of our stories. Now tell the end of yours.
Okay. The Kardashians visited Planned
Parenthood. No, the other one.
I'm not going to tell the other one. You got to listen.
I hate.
So we've got some audio of the Kardashians and the way they felt after their visit to Planned Parenthood. This is very educational.
The perception of Planned Parenthood is that it's this like abortion clinic. That's nothing like what it's like.
No.
Hearing that firsthand really made it real for me.
Mm-hmm. Hearing the stories for sure was eye-opening.
I'm a big fan of Planned Parenthood now. Meeting all the
me
girls
too.
And hearing their stories and seeing how many women have been helped by some of the services they have to offer. I think people need to be more educated before they form opinions. And
don't
that's what I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to do today.
The Kardashians telling us that we need to be more educated is a little bit like McDonald's telling Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. They need to use better meat. It's a little like Bemidji Community Technical Institute of Beauty suggesting MIT should have higher academic standards. It's unbelievable. People should be more educated. Okay, I'm like a super big fan now because in addition to murdering 300,000 to 400,000 kids, they also give out condoms. Oh,
yay.
Okay. Now it's great. Thank you for the education.
That's great. Because they were the same wonderful family that took a trip to Cuba, if you remember.
Oh,
and
that's,
were completely amazed at what a quaint retro community
quaint.
It was because they had
Wait,
all
still
old
have
cars.
Old 50s cars.
Well, isn't that great? What
it's
a cool,
so cool
little niche they've filled here.
No. It's not Disneyland.
They're so
People
throwback.
Can't move from the 1950s.
So stupid.
Thank you, Pat.
Pat Gray Unleashed coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV networks in just a few moments.
I will tell you, the Casper has outdone themselves again. I was one of the first people to have the new wave mattress from Casper, and I will tell you, the first couple of nights I didn't like it. I told my wife, I don't know if I like this one. It may go back, but Casper says try it out. So by the end of the week, I was like, you know what? I think I kind of like this mattress. Last night, this is a true story. Last night, I had a uninterrupted, total, the greatest night of sleep I've had in a long time. And I got up this morning and I went, I love this mattress. You have to try it out in your own home. This is why we sleep on the wrong mattress for so long. Because we buy it in a store, then they deliver it, and then, you know, you can't return it if you don't like it. And you don't know the first time you're laying on a mattress. It takes honestly days, if not weeks, to figure out how does my body really settle into this. Now, Casper collected 3 years of data feedback and foam research and sleep science, and they created something called the Wave. And this is a patent pending support system that mirrors your body's natural curvature for a deeper, more restorative sleep. It really is. It's going for the people who have real pain in their shoulders, pain in their hips or knees. That's what that Wave is for. It's designed out of breathable foam, so you sleep cool year round, and it fits the curvature of your body. Try it now for yourself in your own home for 100 nights risk-free with free shipping and free returns. All you have to do is go to Casper.com and use the promo code Beck. If you don't love it, you return it. And there's no hassle and no questions asked. They come and pick it up for free. You can save $75 now on your purchase if you use the promo code Beck. Go to casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. Minimum purchase is required. See site for details. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So tomorrow we begin to really look into the tax plan. Mm-hmm. And the House is set to release its tax plan on Wednesday. The Senate is planning on releasing its own bill in about a week or so. So far, I mean, they're looking at not repealing the estate tax, 40% tax on estates. So you want to leave your fortune to your kids? You can't. I mean, you can leave half your fortune to your kids.
Yeah, and it's a high number, so they always say, it's just rich people. Though when it comes to like family farms and family businesses, it winds up being a lot of times families just have to sell the businesses because they can't pay the tax. So they have to just dump what the family has built the entire time because...
I'll never be able to leave our family farm to my kids. I won't be able to do it. They will not be able to afford the taxes. Just won't. I couldn't leave my house. I couldn't leave a farm that we have. I couldn't leave it because they won't be able to afford the taxes. Taxes are more than what they make in a year. It's craziness. It's crazy. Senate is more likely than the House to do a full repeal of the state and local tax deduction, which means if you pay state taxes, you're not going to be able to deduct that.
Yeah, and Republicans are the one pushing for this. Democrats are opposed to it because it hits high state tax locations a lot worse. So if you're in New York and you have a really high state tax rate, well, I remember when we worked there, we had to deal with that all the time. In Texas, there's a 0% state tax, so it wouldn't affect you at all.
It's going to kill states.
Yeah, so
if you have the ability to move, the problem is most people don't have the ability to move. But if you live in a high state tax, now you can't deduct that from your federal income tax. That's going to really hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, thought being it's going to punish blue states, basically,
yes.
and help red states, and also help the numbers kind of balance out at the end a little bit better.
The four individual tax brackets, the highest rate is going to go from 39.6%.
This is pretty exciting. This you got to say, this part of the Senate plan is really exciting.
Yeah.
39.6%.
I mean, there's some things we can dream on, yeah. But I didn't think we could get here. I didn't think we could start here.
It's a great starting place.
So, they're going to take the top rate from 39.6, and go to 39.6.
That is incredible.
That's incredible.
Because, I mean, really one of the big things for the economy is consistency.
Yeah.
And if you can keep that tax rate exactly the same in your
tax
cut package.
Well, but if you're starting at 39.6 and you're saying, mm-hmm. I'm going to go to 39.6, mm-hmm. they might be able to get that up to 50 by the time they're finished negotiating.
And then it's really exciting.
Then it's great. Yeah, yeah.
That is legitimately what their Susan Collins has demanded. They do not lower the highest rate. And so they're going to just listen to her and do it. 39.6 stays 39.6 in the tax cut plan.
House bill tomorrow. We'll give you all the details coming up.
Glenn Beck.